Hello and welcome back to the Actual News Podcast. My name is Olga Nesterova. Welcome to our last podcast episode of 2024. Happy December 31st. Before we ring into New Year, that's what I have for you. Biden's statement on Medicare's new $2,000 cap, New York governor orders prison reforms, power outage in Puerto Rico, leaked Russian military plans, more sanctions, and more, way more, actual national and global news. Let's go. Per usual, let's begin with some quick news. Today, President Biden departed St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands, for Wilmington, Delaware, where the Biden family will ring into 2025 before heading to Camp David for the day and then returning to the White House by January 2nd. Russia and Ukraine exchanged more than 300 prisoners of war in a deal brokered by United Arab Emirates. Donald Trump failed in an appeal to overturn a $5 million judgment for sexually abusing writer E. Jean Carroll and later defaming her. Trump endorsed Mike Johnson to continue as House Speaker. By the way, the votes will be on Friday to see who will be the new or remaining House Speaker. A Chinese spy agency hacked the Treasury Department, gaining access to employee workstations and unclassified documents, the Biden administration announced. President Biden on Monday issued an executive order directing the closure of U.S. government agencies and executive departments for January 9th to show respect for former President Jimmy Carter, who died on Sunday at the age of 100. South Korea's policy agency said on Tuesday it was making efforts to expedite the process of identifying dead bodies from the Jeju airplane crash that killed 179 people on Sunday. Now to longer readouts. President Biden announced that Medicare's new $2,000 cap on prescription drug costs, part of his Inflation Reduction Act, will take full effect on January 1, 2025. Prior to his presidency, seniors with Medicare faced overwhelming costs for medication, sometimes over $10,000 annually. His efforts to challenge Big Pharma resulted in the first ever cap on out-of-pocket prescription drug costs, which was initially set at $3,500 for 2024, saving $1 billion for Medicare beneficiaries in just the first half of the year. Starting in 2025, the cap will drop to $2,000, benefiting 19 million people who will save on average of $400 each. Biden emphasized that this is a major step toward making healthcare a right, not a privilege. Now to New York. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has ordered significant prison reforms after the death of black inmate Robert Brooks, who was beaten by correction officers at Marcy Correctional Facility earlier this month. Brooks, 43, died on December 10th. Hours after the violent incident, which was captured on body-worn cameras. Video footage shows several officers, most of whom are white, kicking and punching the restrained inmate. Governor Hochul condemned the incident, calling it a failure of the system and pledging to address the culture within state prisons. As part of the response, she appointed a new superintendent, allocated $400 million for camera installations, and ordered a comprehensive review of prison practices. Additionally, the state is expanding whistleblower protection and increasing funding for independent prison oversight. The Attorney General's office is investigating the incident, and criminal charges for those involved are possible. Hundreds of migrants gathered outside an immigration office in Tapachula, southern Mexico, on Monday, hoping to secure a legal entry to U.S. before President-elect Donald Trump takes office in January. Migrants with confirmed appointments on the U.S. government app CBP-1 were being bused by Mexican government from the southern to the northern border to protect them from gangs and organized crime. With Trump planning to end Biden's humanitarian programs, which have allowed migrants to make appointments and enter the U.S. legally, many rushed to complete the process before January 20th. Migrants like Venezuelan Johandri Paz and Salvadoran Jose Escobar expressed urgency in reaching the U.S. despite potential policy changes, relying on the Mexican government's buses that transport them northward. Three suspects were arrested on Monday in connection with the death of a Mexican migration agent found with head injuries and signs of violence in Chihuahua State. The agent was attacked at the checkpoint near Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, while checking the identification documents of foreign nationals. Two Venezuelan men and a Colombian national were taken into custody. The agent's death marks a rare instance of deadly violence against migration officials and comes just weeks before U.S. President-elect Trump is expected with the crackdown on immigration. As the U.S. border policy tightens, hundreds of migrants in southern Mexico have been rushing to secure legal entry into the U.S. before Trump's inauguration on January 20th. Federal authorities unsealed an indictment against U.S. Army soldier Cameron John Wiginius, arrested on December 20th for selling and attempting to sell stolen confidential phone records. He allegedly operated online under the alias Kyber Phantom, claimed involvement in multiple hacks, including access to phone records to Vice President Kamala Harris and President-elect Donald Trump. Wiginius is linked to a hacking group connected to extensive data breaches involving sensitive personal and financial information. The case is being prosecuted in Seattle alongside cases against Connor Muka, arrested in Canada, and John Bintz, detained in Turkey for similar cybercrimes targeting Snowflake customers. Cybersecurity expert Allison Nixon attributed Wiginius' identification to swift law enforcement actions after Muka's group made threats against researchers. The Department of Justice and FBI have not commented. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro filed a complaint with Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, on Monday, urging PJM Interconnection, the U.S. largest power grid operator, to revise its market rules to prevent soaring electricity costs. PJM, which serves over 65 million people across 13 states, has faced criticism after its annual capacity auction resulted in record-high payments to power plants. Shapiro argues that PJM's price cap is excessively high and could lead to a $20.4 billion increase in electricity bills for consumers without significantly improving grid reliability. PJM attributed the price surge to tightening power supplies and rising demand, particularly due to policy shifts and growth in data centers and electrification. The U.S. government Madoff Victim Fund announced its 10th and final distribution on Monday, completing payouts totaling $4.3 billion to 40,930 victims of Bernard Madoff's Ponzi scheme. A final $131.4 million will be distributed to 23,408 claimants, marking the disbursement of all available forfeited assets. Victims, including individuals, schools, charities, and pension plans, will have recouped an average of 93.71% of their proven losses by the fund's closure in 2025. The total recovery for Madoff's victims, including funds from the liquidation of his firm, is approximately $19 billion. The fund was primarily financed through settlements with JPMorgan Chase and Jeffrey Pickover's estate. Madoff's $64.8 billion fraud was uncovered in 2008, and he died in prison in 2021 after attempting to serve the 150-year sentence. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser described her meeting with President-elect Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago as positive, expressing optimism for collaboration despite their historically strained relationship. The 45-minute meeting, held at Bowser's request, focused on shared priorities, including federal workforce support, infrastructure, underutilized federal buildings, and green spaces. Bowser, a three-term Democrat, highlighted their mutual desire to make Washington the best, most beautiful city in the world. Trump, who has often criticized Bowser's leadership and the city's management, did not comment on the discussion. Their relationship has been marked by clashes, notably during Trump's first term and the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests. Bowser created the symbolic Black Lives Matter Plaza near the White House in response to Trump's rhetoric during the demonstrations. Despite Washington's significant rise in homicides in 2023, violent crime has declined sharply in 2024. Bowser's meeting signals potential collaboration as Trump's second term begins on January 20th. Billionaire investor Bill Ackman expects President-elect Trump to remove Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from conservatorship, possibly making them private entities again. Ackman speculated that this could occur within 2 years, with the companies potentially going public by 2026. Following his comments on social media, shares of Fannie Mae rose 18.4% and Freddie Mac shares increased by 18%. Fannie and Freddie, originally created to expand the home lending market, were placed in conservatorship in 2008 after suffering significant losses during the housing market collapse. A U.S. judge ruled that Hain Celestial Group must face a proposed class action lawsuit accusing it of failing to disclose the presence of arsenic in some of its Earth's Best baby food products. U.S. District Judge Nina Morrison found that parents plausibly alleged the products exceeded safe arsenic thresholds, which could influence consumers' decisions to buy the food for their children. However, the judge dismissed claims regarding other heavy metals like lead, cadmium, and mercury, citing no clear safety benchmark. Hain Celestial argued that the parents lacked standing to sue and that heavy metals and are naturally present in food ingredients. The lawsuit is part of broader litigation accusing baby food producers, including Beech Nut, Gerber, and Nestle, of concealing harmful levels of heavy metals which could cause neurological damage in children. On Tuesday morning, Puerto Rico experienced a massive power outage, leaving approximately 90% of the island without electricity. The power grid failure, which began around 9:30 a.m., which is 1:30 p.m. GMT, is believed to have been caused by an issue with an underground line, according to energy distribution company Luma Energy. While the exact cause is still under investigation, Luma indicated that it could take between 24 to 48 hours to restore power, depending on conditions. The failure affected both public and private power plants, including those operated by the local generator Genera. Despite the disruption, two plants were reported to have started up again by 9:30 a.m. Puerto Rico has struggled with chronic power outages for years, exacerbated by the deterioration of its energy infrastructure and the lasting impacts of Hurricane Maria in 2017. So South Korea, a South Korean court approved an arrest warrant for President Yoon Suk-yeol on Tuesday following his impeachment and suspension from power over his decision to impose martial law on December 3rd. Yoon is under criminal investigation for possible insurrection charges related to the controversial move, as reported by Yonhap News Agency. South Korea's acting president Choi Sang-mok announced on Tuesday plans to swiftly fill vacancies on the Constitutional Court, a step he described as essential for restoring stability following a tumultuous month marked by the impeachment of two of his predecessors. Choi, who assumed the acting presidency on December 27th, emphasized the urgency of resolving the nation's political uncertainty and mitigating its economic and social impacts. Quote, "I decided to appoint constitutional court justices because of the urgency of ending political uncertainty and social conflict as soon as possible to stop the possibility of crisis in the economy and people's livelihoods," unquote, Choi stated during a cabinet meeting. The crisis began on December 3rd when President Yoon Suk-yeol's brief attempt to impose martial law led to his suspension from power. Prime Minister Han Duck-soo, who had been serving as acting president since Yoon's suspension, was impeached on December 22nd for his refusal to appoint three constitutional court justices, citing limitations in his authority as acting leader. With both Yoon and Han facing impeachment trials, the constitutional court's decision on their cases remains pivotal. However, the court's functionality was hindered by three vacancies among its nine justices, requiring unanimous agreement among the six current justices to remove Yoon from office. Choi announced his intention to appoint two justices immediately, with a third appointment contingent on consensus between the ruling People Power Party and the opposition Democratic Party, which controls parliament. These appointments aim to restore the court's ability to adjudicate the pending impeachment cases. The acting president also called on both parties to cooperate in addressing broader national challenges, including the aftermath of a devastating plane crash and mounting economic concerns. The political uncertainty has raised alarms among financial observers. Rating agency Fitch recently warned that a prolonged crisis could jeopardize South Korea's economic stability, potentially resulting in a credit rating downgrade for Asia's fourth largest economy. The current turmoil underscores a deepening divide between South Korea's major political factions. The Democratic Party has clashed with Yoon's administration on issues ranging from judicial appointments to governance strategies, further complicating efforts to resolve the crisis. Choi's leadership during this critical juncture will be key to navigating South Korea through its most significant political upheaval in recent history, as the country awaits the Constitutional Court's rulings on the fates of its impeached leaders. In a firm New Year's address on Tuesday, Chinese President Xi Jinping reiterated Beijing's resolve to achieve reunification with Taiwan, issuing a pointed warning to pro-independence advocates both within and outside the self-governed island of 23 million. Quote, "No one can ever break our family bonds, and no one can stop the historical trend of national reunification," unquote, Xi declared during the televised speech on state broadcaster CCTV. He underscored that people on both sides of the Taiwan Strait are one family, calling for unity under the vision of China's national rejuvenation. Xi's remarks come as China intensifies its military activities near Taiwan, with nearly daily incursions by warships and aircraft into the region's waters and airspace. Taiwanese officials described the maneuvers as part of Beijing's strategy to normalize its military presence around the island. While China considers Taiwan a breakaway province destined to reunite with the mainland, Taiwan's government, led by newly elected President Lai Ching-te, rejects Beijing's claims. Lai, whom Beijing labels as separatist, has maintained that only the Taiwanese people can determine their future and has called for respect for their democratic choices. The year 2024 saw heightened tensions in the Taiwan Strait after President Lai's May inauguration. China staged two rounds of war games near the island, issuing stark warnings against what it termed as separatist acts. In December, Beijing launched a significant naval mobilization near Taiwan and in the East and South China Seas following Lai's stopovers in Hawaii and Guam during a Pacific tour that Beijing heavily criticized. China, which has not ruled out the use of force to bring Taiwan under its control, framed these military exercises as necessary deterrence against perceived independence movements. Adding to the regional friction, U.S. arms sales to Taiwan under the Taiwan Relations Act have continued to irritate Beijing. These sales, viewed by China as provocative, prompted Beijing to impose sanctions on U.S. defense companies and their executives. Despite these challenges, the U.S. remains steadfast in its commitment to Taiwan's defense, emphasizing stability in the Taiwan Strait as critical to regional and global security. Xi Jinping's speech and Beijing's increasing military pressure signal a continuation of its hardline stance on Taiwan. As the island remains a flashpoint in U.S.-China relations, the world watches closely, bracing for the implications of these escalating tensions in the year ahead. China's Public Security Minister Wang Xiaohong has pledged to enhance international cooperation in drug control efforts. Speaking at a meeting, Wang, who also heads the National Narcotics Control Committee, emphasized the need to eradicate the soil that breeds and spreads the drug problem. His remarks come amid increasing pressure from the United States for China to help reduce fentanyl-related death. While China asserts it has some of the strictest drug laws globally, it has urged the U.S. to address domestic demand for narcotics as part of the solution. Now, Elon Musk's endorsement of Germany's far-right Alternative for Germany, AfD party, has drawn sharp criticism now from German officials, including Vice Chancellor Robert Habeck. In his New Year's address, Habeck described Musk's support as logical and systematic effort to weaken Europe, arguing that a less regulated Europe benefits powerful interests like Musk's. The German government also accused Musk of attempting to influence the upcoming national elections following his guest opinion piece in Welt am Sonntag, where he praised the AfD's stance on regulation, tax, and market deregulation. Musk, who has previously supported Trump, faced backlash over his comments, which led to the resignation of a Welt editor. Now, flight records from Brazil-made Embraer aircraft that crashed in Kazakhstan last week are being sent to Brazil for data extraction. The Brazilian Air Force confirmed that the cockpit voice and flight data recorder will be analyzed in Brasilia, with oversight from officials from Kazakhstan, Russia, and Azerbaijan. The investigation following the crash that killed 38 people will focus on the role of Russian air defenses in the incident. The plane diverted from southern Russia due to Ukrainian drone attacks crashed near Aktau, Kazakhstan. The owner of the Eagle S, an oil tanker seized by Finland last week for suspected involvement in damaging undersea power and telecom cables in the Baltic Sea, is seeking its release. Finnish authorities boarded the Cook Islands registered ship on Thursday, suspecting it had severed the S-Link 2 power cable and damaged several fiber optic lines while dragging its anchor. Investigators believe the incident occurred on December 25th. Finland's Customs Service also suspects the Eagle S is part of a fleet evading sanctions on Russian oil and has impounded its cargo. The ship's owner, UAE-based Caravella LLC FZ, filed a court request to cancel the seizure, claiming no legal basis for the action. Finnish officials, however, maintained that the seizure was lawful and that the crew's rights were respected. Now, leaked classified Russian military documents revealed by Financial Times this morning show that as early as 2013-2014, Russia developed plans for attacks on Japan and South Korea, including strikes on civilian infrastructure. The documents list 160 potential targets, including military bases, radar installations, command centers, and key infrastructure like bridges, tunnels, power plants, and industrial facilities. Specific targets include nuclear facilities in Tokai, Japan, and steel plant in Pohang, South Korea. One scenario detailed the destruction of the Okushirito base using 12 KH-101 cruise missiles, which were believed to have 85% success rate. However, these missiles have proven less effective in an actual combat, struggling against advanced air defense systems. The documents also reveal Russia's efforts to test the defenses of its neighbors. In February 2014, Two 95 strategic bombers flew a 17-hour mission around South Korea and Japan, provoking 18 fighter intercepts. This was part of regular operations to assess the defensive capabilities of these regional countries. These leaks highlight Russia's strategic insecurity on its eastern flank and emphasize the interconnectedness of European and Asian theaters of war. Analysts argue that conflicts in either region can impact the other. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, South Korea and Japan have deepened their cooperation with the United States, further diminishing Russian influence in the region, a development that likely frustrates the Kremlin. Now, in his New Year's address, Russian President Putin expressed confidence in the country's future, emphasizing unity and resilience despite economic challenges and the ongoing war in Ukraine. Putin reassured citizens that their well-being remains a priority, but offered no specific plans to address rising prices or the central bank's 21% interest rate, which is impacting businesses and homeowners. Reflecting on Russia's historic victories, including its role in defeating Nazi Germany, Putin framed current challenges as part of a broader mission. Marking 25 years since its first presidential address, he paid tribute to Russian soldiers in Ukraine, praising their bravery while avoiding details on battlefield developments or prospects for peace. In 2024, Russia made gains in Ukraine, but at significant cost, while also facing Ukraine's first ever incursion into its western Kursk region. Despite deploying additional troops, including over 10,000 reportedly from North Korea, Russia has yet to reclaim the occupied area. Experts argue that Russia's strategic focus on Ukraine undermines its global standing, with losses in Kursk, the fall of its ally Bashar al-Assad in Syria, and increasing reliance on China, highlighting vulnerabilities. Putin defended his leadership, asserting that Russia has rebounded from existential threats and regretted delaying the invasion of Ukraine until 2022. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un pledged to further solidify the country's strategic partnership with Russia in a New Year letter to President Vladimir Putin, according to state media KCNA. Kim expressed his commitment to deepening bilateral ties, which he said had been elevated through new initiatives in 2023. He also wished for 2025 to be marked as a year of victory for Russia in its fight against, quote, neo-Nazism, unquote. The message follows the signing of a mutual defense treaty between the two countries in June, under which they agreed to assist each other in the event of an armed attack. North Korea has since sent tens of thousands of troops to support Russia's war in Ukraine, with reports of over 1,000 casualties among them, by the way, within just 1 week. The U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, the OFAC, has imposed sanctions on Iranian and Russian entities and individuals accused of engaging in malign influence and election interference activities targeting the 2024 U.S. presidential election. Key points from the announcements include Iran's involvement. The Cognitive Design Production Center, a subsidiary of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, conducted influence operations aimed at inciting tensions among the U.S. electorate. Iranian cyber actors were previously designated for compromising accounts tied to 2024 presidential campaign and engaging in disinformation. Russia's involvement. The Moscow-based Center for Geopolitical Expertise, affiliated with the Russian main intelligence directorate, the GRU, utilized generative AI tools to create and distribute disinformation targeting the U.S. electorate. CGE also manipulated videos and disseminated fake news to sow discord in the U.S. election, supported financially by the GRU. Sanctions details are designated entities and individuals face blocked property and interests in the U.S. U.S. persons and entities are prohibited from engaging in transactions with the designated parties, and non-U.S. persons risk sanctions for facilitating activities that violate U.S. sanctions. These measures reinforce the U.S. government's commitment to protecting its electoral process and holding foreign actors accountable for attempts to undermine democracy. The U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, the OFAC, also has sanctioned Russian judge Alesya Mendeleeva for her role in the arbitrary detention of Moscow city councilor and human rights defender Alexei Gorinov. Mendeleeva sentenced Gorinov to 7 years in prison in 2022 for opposing Russia's war against Ukraine and calling for a moment of silence for the war's victims. Despite Gorinov's ill health, Mendeleeva refused to grant him medical treatment and ignored defense witnesses during the trial. Mendeleeva has been designated under Executive Order 13818, targeting perpetrators of serious human rights abuse. This sanction blocks her assets in the U.S. and restricts U.S. persons from engaging in transactions with her. We're not done yet. It's a very long podcast this time. I feel you, but we need actual news. So let's continue. Starting January 1st, 2024, Russia will cease its gas exports to Europe via Ukraine, signaling the end of a key transit route dating back to Soviet times. The shutdown follows the expiration of a 5-year transit deal between Russia and Ukraine. Although the European Union had already reduced its reliance on Russian gas after the war in Ukraine, the cessation of this supply route will have significant geopolitical implications. Russia's share of the European gas market has drastically diminished since its invasion of Ukraine, with alternative sources like the United States, Qatar, and Norway now taking the lead. While the immediate market impact is minimal, the loss of Russian gas has contributed to Europe's economic struggles, including inflation and an industrial slowdown. Gazprom, Russia's state-controlled gas company, recorded a $7 billion loss in 2023, its first annual loss since 1999. The pipeline running through Ukraine has delivered about 50 billion cubic meters of gas in 2023, a fraction of Russia's previous peak supply. Despite the reduced volume, the end of this supply route will particularly affect Moldova, which remains reliant on Russian gas. Countries like Hungary will still receive gas through the TurkStream pipeline from the south, though some nations had hoped to maintain the Ukrainian route. Now, let's turn to Israel. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu left his hospital bed against medical advice to rally support for his government's contentious 2025 budget. The wartime austerity bill, featuring tax hikes and spending cuts, narrowly passed an initial vote despite opposition from coalition partners, including far-right Public Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir and ultra-Orthodox parties. Ben-Gvir demands increased police funding, while ultra-Orthodox groups oppose measures mandating military enlistment for their members. Netanyahu urged unity, warning against endangering his coalition, the most far-right in Israel's history. The budget now proceeds to Knesset committees for further revisions, with final approval expected by January. Failure to pass the budget by March 31st would trigger new elections. Netanyahu previously sought to stabilize his coalition by appointing Gideon Saar, leader of the New Hope Party, as foreign minister. However, cracks persist amid economic struggles following the October 7 Hamas attacks and subsequent conflict. Israel faces soaring inflation and stagnant growth, compounding the pressure on its government. Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danan, issued a stark warning to Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi militia on Monday, urging them to cease missile attacks on Israel or face the same fate as groups like Hamas. Meanwhile, the U.S. military conducted airstrikes on Houthi-controlled facilities in Yemen's capital, Sana'a, and along the coast on December 30th and 31st. According to U.S. Central Command, the CENTCOM, the strikes targeted a Houthi command center and facilities used for producing and storing advanced conventional weapons, including missiles and drones. The Iran-backed Houthi group has escalated attacks on commercial shipping in the Red Sea over the past year, seemingly to enforce a naval blockade on Israel in solidarity with Palestinians amidst the Gaza war. In response, Houthi spokesperson Mohammed Abdul Salam stated that Yemen would continue to defend itself against these attacks, signaling no immediate de-escalation. The strikes highlight growing tensions in the region, with Yemen's Red Sea coastline becoming a flashpoint for broader geopolitical conflicts involving the U.S., Israel, and Iran. And lastly, the U.S. Department of Defense announced the repatriation of Rida bin Saleh al-Yazidi from the Guantanamo Bay detention facility to Tunisia. Al-Yazidi, designated ISN 038, was deemed eligible for transfer following a comprehensive interagency review process mandated by Executive Order 13492. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin notified Congress of the planned repatriation in January 2024, and the transfer was completed in coordination with the Tunisian government. As of today, 26 detainees remain at Guantanamo Bay, with 14 eligible for transfer, 3 awaiting a periodic review board, 7 involved in military commissions, and 2 having been convicted and sentenced. And that's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe, please share, please check out our AM Actual News. I went live this morning with detailed news and also details on late President Carter's funeral services. If you are traveling to Georgia or are in Georgia, in DC, and would like to pay your respects, please tune in to get all the details. And please don't hesitate to email me or message me with any questions, and I will provide my guidance to my best ability. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe to our newsletter. All the links are in description of this episode. If you're listening from the newsletter, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I wish you a wonderful end of the year 2024. Slide well into 2025, or ring well into 2025. And I wish you a peaceful, happy, and prosperous new year 2025. Thank you so much for listening. We are off on January 1st and we continue per usual on January 2nd. And that's where I'm going to see you. Thank you so much. See you back on the Actual News Podcast.